assumptions are mutually inconsistent, and you cannot blame quantum mechanics for the paradox. Now, on the first subject, which I had several collaborators, I started on my work in mixed dynamics with Asher Peres, and now it's a collaboration with Aida Ahmadzadegan, who is a student of Rob Mann from the University of Waterloo and also works with me at Macquarie. And the second topic is the outgrowth of work with Radu Ionicu, who was at Macquarie, at IQC, and now in Bucharest, Thomas Genevine, and Rob Mann, whom you know pretty well. So let's start from the beginning. A story of two oscillators. Probably we'll need a little bit more than just two oscillators, but nevertheless. And as everybody here knows, we have natural languages to speak when we discuss quantum mechanics or classical mechanics. In classical mechanics, it's a phase space, and the Hamiltonian dynamics or Liouvillean dynamics, if you want to do statistical mechanics. And quantum mechanics, if we don't go to exotic stuff, it will be Hilbert space and wave functions there. What we will use when we talk about systems which quantum but behave nearly as classical, we'll look at two ways of doing things. We'll look at quantum mechanics in phase space, but rather quickly, and mostly we will discuss how we can do classical mechanics in the Hilbert space and then apply it to coupling between purely classical and emerging classical systems, and we'll see what happens. So let me start from a brief review of phase space of Hilbert space classical mechanics, which started from works of Koopman. So if we have a probability density, let's say position and momentum, I don't specify the dimension, just label them by generic x and k, and then its evolution, if the system is conservative, is it Hamiltonian, density, probability density on the phase space follows the Liouville evolution, we can switch to the Hilbert space formalism by defining a wave function as a square root of this probability density. And then from the Liouville equation, we get something which looks very much like the Schrödinger equation with the Liouvillean operator obtained by just this bunch of derivatives. Basically, we're just reproducing the same equations. Obviously, I think also everybody at some stage discovers free lunch theorem, that there is no such thing as a free lunch. So you always have to pay with something, and here we have to pay by introducing unobservable operators, which are generators of shift in the position and shift in the momentum as part of our theory, or at least part of the mathematical apparatus of our theory. Now, over the years, it was proven rigorously that this Koopmanian formulation of classical mechanics in Hilbert space is equivalent to the usual classical dynamics in all its aspects. What we had in the previous slides is essentially the Schrödinger picture. We have operators and we have evolving wave function. It's possible to define and use a Heisenberg picture in which our wave function is given through the initial conditions and our operators, observable and unobservable, evolve with the unitary dynamics generated by the Liouvillean. We can introduce tensor product structure, we can write entangled states, but they don't have much operational interest. Measurement formalism looks lovely in it. It's just brilliant and explains away the measurement problem. Unfortunately, we have difficulty with actually running dynamical couplings. We can define measurements, introduce unsharp or fuzzy measurements where we have finite resolution in the phase space. As a mathematical tool, if you look, for example, in Reed and Simon, it's very useful in the ergodic theory. My personal interest in it was that once I learned about this brilliant formalism, I thought that, oh, I'm so brilliant, I can come up with a wonderful idea how to describe mixed dynamics, meaning one system is classical, one system is quantum, and while it's not a good idea to couple, functions to operators, if we can write classical mechanics on a Hilbert space, I'm going to couple operators to operators, and everything will be nice and beautiful. The answer is that it's not. that you're running in all kinds of difficulties, even with simple examples, and you can and you should severely restrict allowed states, and even then you should be very careful. So as a way of writing a couple unambiguous classical quantum dynamics, it didn't work, and sort of I let it be for a while. Now let me just introduce another notion, which again I'm sure that almost everybody here knows what it is and what are the Gaussian states, for example, but just to be sure that we are running through the same stuff. So it's a quasi-probability distribution, meaning that lives on the phase space when it gives us right marginal distributions like probability density position representation or momentum representation or in any other quadrature. Normalized to one, as it was discovered already by Wigner, probably in the first paper in 1932. This thing is not always positive, and positivity or non-positivity of Wigner function is taken as a pretty good idea of whether our quantum system or quantum state is classical or non-classical. Technical way to the derivation goes into several steps. We start from the density operator. Let's say we have an n-dimensional system. We introduce the characteristic function, and from the characteristic function, we go to the Wigner function. Now, just to make sure about notation, those are different collection of classical quantities. This is with caret on it, is a combination of quantum positions and momenta for all n degrees of freedom, and having in mind harmonic oscillators and other simple systems, represent the symplectic structure just by this matrix. Then the derivation is extremely straightforward, just a nice exercise of at the undergrad level. And just to remind you, if we go from this slightly abstract definition to practical calculations, in the case of one dimension, this is our Wigner function. Of course, Wigner function behaves in a very many interesting ways and gets particularly neat structure if we're dealing with the chaotic system. That's one of the examples considered by paper of Zurek. Now, those three panes are quantum. If we'll just analyze the equivalent classical system, obviously, probability distribution is always non-negative. Certain features still carry over, and that's probably one of the illustrations why the Wigner function is so useful when you try to analyze correspondence between classical and quantum regimes. But this is not a subject of my talk for tonight. Now, before we go into Gaussian states, just let me quickly run through the notation and units. Now, I'm always worried about the units, that things don't get the right dimensions, and it's a bit of a painful process. So I rescale everything so things look as dimensionless as possible. This is my, say, position space scale, inverse scale for the momentum. So far, it's classical variables rescaled, promote them to operators, rescale the operators the same way. Creation annihilation operators, if we deal with harmonic oscillator or electromagnetic field, which we quantize as a bunch of harmonic oscillators, that this is the Hamiltonian we get. For our system, we can introduce the correlation matrix, which is, okay, here we have an anti-commutator of components of my vector Z. So second moments minus the first moments for criterion legal quantum states should satisfy this generalization of the Heisenberg uncertainty relation, and particularly Gaussian states, well, defined depending on according to their name. For example, if we look at the Wigner function, the Wigner function, distribution, position, and momentum in the phase space, is Gaussian. That means it's characterized by the second moment and by the first moment. And that's the definition. Now, they are very nice. So they have a lot of useful properties. And many important states are Gaussian states, including vacuum, thermal states. So that's one of them with half photon in it in the single mode. Coherent states, slightly shifted, or squeeze states, sorry, thermal squeeze states. Again, they are interesting. And one of the questions that people answered when we investigated them, maybe for purposes of quantum information theory, maybe earlier, is what is that dynamic, what is dynamics that preserves this nice property of Gaussianity? And if, this is the most general Gaussian, most general Hamiltonian that preserves the Gaussian form of the states. Basically, it's a linear or quadratic in creation and annihilation operators. And in works of Rob Speckens, Steve Bartlett, Terry Rudolph, it was also shown that Gaussian, if you limit yourself to Gaussian states and Gaussian operators and Gaussian measurements, then essentially what you have, it's just Koopmanian mechanics with finite spaces resolution, which from one of the papers of Rob, I actually learned this clever word, epirestricted. Oh, you see, so I even horrible at spelling, but you know, one spell checker doesn't help me. No, I'm moving it away so from save me the embarrassment. Okay, so what I would like to see is how good is this like classical idea is. And for this, I would like to couple this system to, oh no, now it will go on Facebook. Oh my God. Okay, so I would like to know how good this thing is. So I'd like to couple a honest or as honest as possible classical system with this quantum system which behaves as classical. And again, there are two ways of doing it. Or we can do it Koopman way, or we can do it Mayal way. And I know more about the Koopman way and it gives slightly more unpleasant results, so I'm going to go mostly through it. So our systems are classical and quantum oscillators. The coupling is restricted to be Gaussian, and then we'll look if we have to restrict it any further. Again, since I have to deal with classical operators, a bit of notation, I introduced the same scales for position and momentum, where kappa is anything, you can do it one, or if you want lambda to be actually dimensions of length, you need to give kappa dimensions of action. You can think about it already as a h-bar, but it doesn't tell anything yet about the uncertainties or intrinsic fuzziness of my classical system. So let's look at the classical oscillator. First of all, if we're already doing this Koopmanian thing, we can define creation and annihilation operators. So here are the creation operators. It's position plus, well, not momentum, but I shift. And then it's momentum and generator of the shift in the momentum. As a result, Liouvillean looks, quite nicely. On one hand, it has the structure of Z component of the angular momentum, and it's not surprisingly that it can be written with the help of two flavors of creation and annihilation operators. And of course, it still have Gaussian taste. On the other hand, energy, which is sort of classical Hamiltonian, in this formalism looks uglier, but this is not something that will generate my dynamics. My dynamics follows from this operator. And now let's look at the interaction term. So our combined system involves a quantum oscillator, which we, self-Hamiltonian is obviously Gaussian. We start with the Gaussian state, Liouvillean for my quantum system, and most general interaction term, which doesn't involve self-interacting terms. From here, we go to the equations of motion. It will be slightly nicer to work, actually, if we go back to position, momentum, and original phase space variables. Metrics, which gives me dynamics, first, system of coupled first-order ordered differential equations. Okay, some of them are operators. Take the expectation values on the initial data, Heisenberg picture. So that's a case where coefficients are taken to be real. General case looks even more horrendous. We look for the modes, again, undergrad exercise. What is not undergrad is that in generic situation, that at least one, or actually one of the pairs of coefficients, lambda bar, will have both real and imaginary parts. And that means that on a scale of our frequencies, even without resonance, starting with original expectation values of the order of one in the units of the H bar equals one, we very quickly go to some kinds of ungainly explosion, exponential growth, and, well, not a good idea to couple system like that. Of course, it would be really nice if we can do it in real life because we would solve the energy crisis and remember, Liouvillean is unbounded from below. But, okay, let's try to be slightly more careful. And close analysis of what goes wrong is that having non-observable operators coupled to, say, quantum position momentum is bad. So if we try to restrict our interaction so there is no unobservable operators, life becomes interesting. While we have the most general allowed type of influence from classical system on quantum system, there is no back reaction. Which is already weird, particularly if we have a resonance, so frequencies of classical and quantum harmonic oscillators are the same. Well, the classical oscillator will work like an external driving force, and we have a resonance, and just, again, everything blows out, and we could solve energy crisis, would be real. So probably, since it's too good to be true, we do have a problem. Even if we restrict our quantum system to Gaussian states, Gaussian evolution, and so on. Of course, it's also possible that this coupling scheme is bad. So let's look at the different story. Let's go and write quantum mechanics in phase space and see what happens. So we replace Mayal brackets with Poisson brackets. For oscillators, it's really not an issue because they are identical. So we can have a coupling and see what happens. Basically, what happens is a very interesting thing. Quantum and classical features may swap. So if we started from classical system, which had sharp position and momentum, and Gaussian quantum state, at some point, and actually it will happen periodically, now we have dispersion-free quantum state. So, okay, so while this coupling is consistent, no energy blowouts, we cannot still couple it to purely classical system. We have to smear our classical system at the same level of smearing. What happens when we have a instead of classical system, something which is more complicated than a harmonic oscillator. In this case, we can expect some funny business might have happened with structure of, say, of the probability distribution on the phase space. And when we convert it back to the Wigner function for our quantum oscillator, we may or may not run into trouble. I don't know it yet. That's what we are trying to investigate. What's clear that, quacks like a duck, swims like a duck, but probably doesn't fly like a duck. So yes, it's very much classical, but we should be careful how we couple things. Some structural issues in how we run the dynamics persist. So that's one story. And the second story is motivated by the delay choice and quantum paradoxes. So those are several papers written by our gang, started with this paper with Radu, where we suggested a quantum delay choice experiment. And I will be particularly interested in our latest result, where we analyzed classical assumptions without ever comparing it to quantum theory. So let me quickly run through a historic story. I couldn't resist it. I finally figured it out. So I'd like to share it with you. So it's told a story that the stuff is made of waves or particles. If we start from Gaussiandi, we'll go to waves, Huygens. I'm already doing it wrong. So starting Gaussiandi, the particles, we'll jump to Huygens, waves, Newton, particles, Young, waves, Poisson, converted to waves, Maxwell, waves, and we have Planck and Einstein going back to particles, and finally we have to blame probably de Broglie, and this is illustration what happens when officers have too much time on their hands while the war is going somewhere else, and Schrödinger for totally messing things up, which is nice, beautiful, and this is how we love it. More seriously, single photon detections that really convince us that light is really made up of particles, and we cannot explain them with semi-classical theory, quantum atoms, and some stochastic noise for vacuum, but then only in 1986 by a group of Alanis-Pay, where if we have open Mach-Zehnder interferometer and balanced beam splitter, we have single detections. If we close the Mach-Zehnder interferometer and vary the phase shift, acquiring data point by point, we see the interference pattern. And that may be a working definition, which is different from what is taken, say, de Broglie-Bohm theory. What is a particle? Particle, this is what shows particle-like statistics in this experiment. And wave, this is what shows the interference type statistics, wave-like statistics in this experiment. So that's the minimal requirement of minimal operational requirement of what I mean by particle and by the wave. So what are they? Waves, particles, or something in between? Surprisingly, a principle of complementarity, which this experiment is probably yet another perfect illustration of it, may be actually confusing. So according to this principle, information provided by different experimental procedures that in principle cannot be performed by single apparatus can be represented by any mathematically allowed quantum state of the system, and those elements of information are said to be complementary. But if we have complementarity, we can have conspiracies. Before entering, again, we're still at quantum story. We're trying to impose classical worldview on something which doesn't fit it. But putting on my conspiratory hat, or actually conspiratory face on, we can treat this experiment as a photon can know in advance, maybe through some bizarre theory, but still causal theory, that the apparatus was set in wave configuration or in particle configuration and adjusted behavior accordingly. This is exactly what delayed-choice experiments are used to attack. Proposed first by von Weizsäcker and really formalized by Wheeler. We again consider Mach-Zehnder interferometer, and we decide to insert or not to insert the second beam splitter only after our photon is already inside the interferometer. And while it's possible to talk whether we use light arriving from different galaxies for tests or as source of our triggers, that's a different story. Conceptually, having a choice to insert or not to insert the beam splitter makes it impossible for photon to change its mind if it's really a wave and really a particle. Now, let me quickly run through hidden variable theories in 2 minutes. And actually, in light of recent developments, probably we need slightly more refined classification. So as I told, purpose, reproduce observed quantum observed statistics, presumably quantum, and maintain your cherished classical concepts. And even if they're probably inadequate, they still provide a coherent worldview. You may like it or you may not like it. It's experimentally viable or experimentally unviable, but it's consistent. Typically, counter HV action is outlined here. Work it out, impose adequacy condition, put some other reasonable constraints, it explodes, do the experiment, explain the experiment away if you're trying to do counter HV action, and then again it's possible to look for further loopholes. It's possible to use light coming from different galaxies to trigger your devices which choose settings for CSHH type measurement. What's really nice that this paper, which I found it's probably the most boring paper I ever read, that is extremely useful. It's written by one statistician and one professor of actuarial studies. But they had patience, and I go to that paper every time when I get confused with hidden variables. They consider three basic axioms, each come in different flavors, looked at their consequences, and established what is possible and what is impossible, basically excluded either by Bell-type theorems or by Cauchon-Speicher. Without going into this diagram, and now we have to make it slightly more sophisticated, three basic axioms, particularly we need determinism. Once hidden variables are defined, there is no residual randomness. Comes in several flavors. Parameter independence, outcome of any measurement depends only on hidden variables and the setup. Again, lambda independence, or hidden variable independence, determination of the hidden variable is independent of the choice of the measurement. Obviously, we have condition of adequacy. Stuff like locality and contextuality are derived from those concepts. So yes, the paper makes a very useful reading. Now, let me see how we apply it to duality. So let's make up a conspiracy theory. So we introduce binary hidden variable. We want to reproduce the observable data. And this binary hidden variable is really a particle, really a wave. So that the data, that's what given by hidden variable theory, that initial condition, a need to reproduce the observed statistics. Our definitions are already given. Photons, particles or waves. And using one of the famous principles of American Army, don't ask, don't tell. We don't care what photons are doing, sorry, what waves are doing in open interferometer and what particles are doing in closed interferometer. Then we can apply it to several situations. Analyzing a classical Wheeler-Zeile choice experiment, we see that the only way to satisfy the condition is to have this causal relationship between settings of the apparatus, so whether we close or we do not close the interferometer. In the language of quantum circuits, beam splitter is Hadamard. And delay choice dismisses this opportunity. Of course, unless you believe into conspiratorial correlations. We can have just a stochastic relationship. Still, adequacy condition is satisfied, but then hidden variable theory loses its meaning because nothing depends on the hidden variable. So it becomes pointless. If it was done experimentally in 2007 by a group of Alain Aspect again, and since its progress, modern times, a random number generator was a quantum random number generator. But if it's so, we can just evolve it into quantum control. So let's look. That's how experimental setup looks from the point of view of a theorist. That's how it looks like from point of view of, say, quantum computing network. But then we replace this one just by quantum control. And we perform measurements before or after, either emulating the classical control or not, because we can first detect our system and only later figure out whether we tested it for particle or wave properties. So we go from analysis of, basically we're going to a data correlation. We have one setup and complementarity of experimental data and not complementarity of the devices. From quantum point of view, it's very simple. Perform several experimentally, so nothing much to discuss. From quantum point of view, analysis, that's where we have to work hard. We have no space-like separation. So we have to either fail with it or live without it, and it will be better. So going through the same chain of reasoning is a resurrect wave particle duality, where nothing depends on hidden variable. Or now we go to a higher level of conspiracy, where hidden variable distribution depends not on the settings of the measurement apparatus, but on probabilities for this measuring apparatus to acquire certain settings. Now, if you're ready to accept it, hidden variable theory leaves. I mean, you probably never can kill them if you really believe in them. Depends how far you're ready to go. Of course, again, experimental results, which are not surprising. The benefit of not having space-like separation that you can do it in exotic systems like NMR or on a chip. You don't, if you think that this level of bizarre is too bizarre, you don't need 42 meters of delays. You can do it on NMR, you can do it on a chip, you can do it in many other systems. Not yet. Now, from here we can go to entangled control, and that's an interesting topic. I talked about it last week. But we can apply the same techniques to analysis of a purely classical problem, or only slightly non-classical one. That's probably the second point of the second part of my talk. I use, as in some of talks today, probably again taking an example from Giulio, I use networks, but I don't apply quantum mechanics. It's just to arrange who acts on whom and what people, what agents do to each other. We assume global hidden variable, everything is known. And the only feature in which we extend classical mechanics is by having two types of statistics, which come up from two different settings of the apparatus. And they're analogous of particle-like and wave-like statistics before. And we don't specify how they look like. We just give that we have some experimental data which tells us what is the statistics of the controller for particular type of settings, and we change the settings, this statistic changes. And we have like P statistics and W statistics. And then we extend our classical theory. I'm not sure whether it's extension or not. So that's what is allowed in our theory. And now we insist that definiteness or objectivity is preserved. So we objectify the statistics by claiming that our system is really P or really W. Unlike previous situations, we don't check whether the predictions that we derive from this system will be adequate. That means whether they conform to quantum mechanics. Actually, we're looking if there is any probability distribution whatsoever which allows to incorporate those ideas. And if yes, maybe we can invent it for another sci-fi movie. If not, then it's a problem within classical domain. So we don't insist about anything about this empirical probability distribution, we'll be happy to accept any. Well, honestly, we would be very unhappy to accept any, because the whole idea was to have a paradox, a conflict. But three actually used assumptions are assumption of objectivity. So it's either W or P. And now we have a big hidden variable that controls everything, and our P and W value thing is just a function. So part of the domain gives us P states, and part of the domain gives us W states. We wanted determinism, and we actually picked up the weak form of determinism, and we wanted the independence. So probability of hidden variables is independent of the settings alpha. That's all what is needed. So adequacy, not imposed, we stick to objectivity, determinism, and independence. What happens? It doesn't work. So first we find a unique non-trivial solution to the constraints 1-3, and we ignore how it arises from lambda. I don't care. The only thing we want is this PW hidden variable theory to be non-empty. So no PW duality through backdoor. And then we either do some interesting wiggling with parameters and changing the domains, running into contradiction, or just looking at this, that on one hand, that we get the same this result, which on one hand implies that lambda is independent of alpha, on the other hand, it's given by x, which is function of alpha. So we're getting to a contradiction. Now, what does it mean? As always, in foundations, maybe the hardest question. We know that three assumptions are incompatible, and there is no theory that will incorporate them. We know that any two assumptions are actually consistent. And specifically, these two assumptions are even consistent with quantum mechanics. It's a theorem. So probably the only lesson here is that, again, you extend a little bit, you have already to give up some of your cherished ideas. But in this particular model, you gave up one idea, you ended up in quantum mechanics. It doesn't have to be like that, just one case, but quantum is pretty consistent and maybe even closed thing. And if you extend it, you might end up in becoming quantum or something else. So to summarize, message as always, as I like, is ambiguous. So interactions are complicated, but interesting. And even if something looks classical, there still might be subtleties in its interaction with other classical system. Quantum control is good. It has some nice conceptual features, gives practical advantages, and you can apply it in all kinds of situations, even if you're not planning to do experiments. And final one, don't always blame quantum mechanics. Classical ideas may be simply inconsistent. So I have to thank a number of people, and I have to thank you for your patience and attention. Thank you.
Yeah, just a little comment which might be of interest. So it's about the beginning of your talk on Hilbert space formation of tensor types. So in early 1960s, Norbert Wiener looked at this problem.
Yeah.
And are you familiar with
In the formulation, yes, but whether what implications for coupling, I'm not familiar with it.
So what he did was to take probability distribution, as you said, on the plus phase space, and map that to the real Hilbert space, and then he complexified that Hilbert space.
Then I'm not familiar with it.
And then he integrates out the momentum degrees of freedom, and then after going through lengthy, rather difficult calculations, he shows that the resulting wave function, satisfies the Schrödinger eigenvalue problem, the discrete eigenvalues. And he proceeds further to show that the ground state of that eigenvalue problem corresponds to the Gibbs thermal distribution on the cluster phase spectrum, which that was wrong. And unfortunately, in the middle of all that, he died. So no one followed that on that work. And no one knows what it means.
I'm not familiar with this work. I would love to look into it. But yeah, at this form, it's not clear how it can be used when you, say, try to couple quantum and classical without going into it. But
I mean, he was interested in hidden molecule theory, and his argument was that the hidden molecule is a kinetic degree of freedom that you integrate after. So he was trying to come up with an alternative form.
Yes, but even, let's say, probably in my first part, my ambition was much narrower. I didn't try to explain away quantum mechanics, so no hidden variables, just saying, so if in certain sense it behave, certain system behave in classical way, whether it solves other problems, standard problems of interest, like interacting classical and quantum. But still, I would love to look into this. Thank you.
Any more questions?